raise a child. Now, the flip side of that is that our society, which basically says, if you have sex, that's like a contract to have a baby, also says once you have that baby, well, what did you have sex for? Now you have a baby. Why should I care? We do nothing compared even to other rich Western countries. We do nothing to help women who have kids. We don't have daycare. We don't have paid maternity leave. If women are poor, they're just out of luck. This is really terrible. The children are our future. And what women can bring to life, both as parents and as non-parents, is tremendously important to our society. And yet we seem willing just to sort of throw all this away.
We've been speaking with Katha Pollitt. The new book, Pro, Reclaiming Abortion Rights, is out next week. Thanks, Katha Pollitt, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thanks so much for having me, Janine. It's great.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. With me is Peter Hart. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6:01, and coming up next is Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs, right here on The Boo. And that's coming up right after this message.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Sings Out, a benefit concert for the Yes on Measure 92 campaign. On Sunday, October 12th at 5 p.m., a diverse collection of Portland musicians will be putting on an evening of revitalized protest classics and creative original songs of revolution. Performers include Zia McCabe and Courtney Taylor Taylor of the Dandy Warhols, Jeremy Wilson of the Dharma Bums, KBOO's Mike Crenshaw, and many, many more. Again, Portland Sings Out will take place Sunday, October 12th from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Star Theater, 13 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, from our hands to yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city.
Hello and welcome to Bread and Roses. We are a feminist radio collective that brings you news and public affairs every Friday night at 6 p.m. here on KBOO. I'm Ashley Thurstrup, and I'm excited to bring you a special show in honor of International Day of the Girl. Just 2 years ago, the UN declared October 11th as the International Day of the Girl Child to raise awareness about all issues concerning gender inequality around the world. It's a day when activist groups come together under the same goal to highlight, discuss, and take action to advance rights and opportunities for girls everywhere. Tonight on Bread and Roses, we are excited to have Elizabeth Nye of Girls Inc. and Megan Kovacs of Raphael House to discuss their professional work in highlighting issues affecting our girls, as well as to explore their personal ideas about what we can all do to support girls and young women throughout our community and internationally. But first, this feminist news, courtesy of Feminist Majority Foundation. States with the greatest restrictions on abortion are the worst for women's overall health, according to a new study from the Center for Reproductive Rights and IBIS Reproductive Health. More than 250 bills restricting abortion were introduced in 40 states in 2014 alone. And in the period between 2011 and 2013, states signed 205 new abortion restriction provisions into law. More laws then were enacted in the entire previous decade, the report states. Based on the study, the groups found a consistently negative relationship between a state's number of abortion restrictions and its performance on indicators of women's health, children's health, and social determinants of health. The group say lawmakers' insistence that anti-abortion legislation is intended to protect women's health is fundamentally flawed rhetoric. With few exceptions, states that have passed multiple policies to restrict abortion have passed fewer evidence-based policies to support women's and children's well-being compared to states with fewer restrictions on abortion, the study read. The negative relationship between the number of abortion restrictions and the number of policies that support women's and children's well-being was stronger than any of the other topics. The study report distinguished 14 different kinds of abortion restrictions and targeted regulation of abortion provider laws, or TRAP laws. After evaluating all 50 states and the District of Columbia, the groups compared each state's performance on 76 different health indicators against the prevalence of anti-abortion legislation. Those indicators fell into five different categories, including women's health outcomes exclusively, including the occurrence of maternal death, children's health outcomes exclusively, and social determinants of health, which social determinants of health address socioeconomic or environmental outcomes proven to impact health. The median number of abortion restrictions was 10, and only Vermont placed no restrictions on abortion. So Kansas, Mississippi, and Oklahoma had all 14 restrictions identified by the groups. Another eight states, Arizona, Indiana, Louisiana, Missouri, Nebraska, North Carolina, North Dakota, and South Carolina had 13 abortion-related restrictions. According to the report, of the 23 states with six or less laws in place, 78% performed above the median score for overall well-being. And of the 28 states with 7 to 14 abortion restrictions in place, only 8 states were above the median score for women's and children's overall well-being. So the best states for women's health were New Hampshire, Iowa, North Dakota, and Vermont. Last summer, a poll found that a majority of Americans supported abortion rights and access and opposed state attempts to regulate what they saw overwhelmingly as a national and not local issue. In 2015, the Center for Reproductive Rights will partner with state advocates to develop data-supported policy that answers the wave of misguided reproductive health laws. And turning to another story, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has brought two lawsuits on behalf of transgender workers. They mark the first time the federal government has sued to protect transgender rights under the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Complaints against two companies were filed Thursday in federal courts in Florida and Michigan. The EEOC in both cases is asking for restitution for the fired transgender employees and for punitive damages for any future discrimination against employees. One of the complaints alleges that Detroit-based company RG&GR Harris Funeral Homes discriminated against Amy Stevensons, a funeral director and embalmer, because she is transgender. According to the EEOC, Amy Stevens has been employed by Harris as a funeral director embalmer since October 2007 and had always adequately performed the duties of that position. In 2013, she gave Harris a letter explaining she was undergoing a gender transition from male to female and would soon start to present or dress in appropriate business attire at work, consistent with her gender identity as a woman. 2 weeks later, Harris's owner fired Stevens, telling her that what she was proposing to do was unacceptable. In a second complaint, the EEOC alleges Florida-based Lakeland Eye Clinic violated Title VII by firing Brandy Branson for being transgender. The second case sounds similar to the first. And the EEOC states that after Branson began to present as a woman and informed the clinic she was transgender, Lakeland fired her. These two complaints mark the first time the EEOC has used Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to challenge gender identity discrimination. In July, President Obama signed an executive order protecting federal employees from discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. At the signing ceremony, President Obama remarked, quote, "It doesn't make much sense, but today in America, millions of our fellow citizens wake up and go to work with the awareness that they could lose their job, not because of anything they do or fail to do, but because of who they are, lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, and that's wrong. We're here to do what we can do to make it right, to bend that arc of justice just a little bit in a better direction. And our last story tonight is a great one and an uplifting one. And it coincides really nice with our show topic tonight about the International Day of the Girl. The 2014 Nobel Peace Prize was awarded jointly to Kailash Satyarthi and Malala Yousafzai for their struggle against the suppression of children and young people and for the right of all children to education, the Norwegian Nobel Committee announced today. Both Satyarthi, a 60-year-old Hindu from India, and Yousafzai, a 17-year-old Muslim from Pakistan, Malala, are renowned children's rights activists. Malala became a household name around the globe when in October 2012 she was shot in the head by a Taliban assassin while on her way to school. The young girl had been an outspoken advocate of girls' education before the shooting. Afterwards, she became an international beacon for the cause and was chosen as Time's runner-up for Person of the Year in 2012, and she was later named one of the world's 100 most influential people. Now, at age 17, she's the youngest ever Nobel laureate. So it's very exciting. And tonight on Bread and Roses, we are so excited to bring you a special show on International Day of the Girl, which is happening tomorrow. But first, we want to tell you all about how you can support KBOO. And, you know, the great news that we have for you today is that our pledge drive ended a little bit early today. That's really exciting. We've actually made our goal. We made our $80,000 goal for the fall membership drive. And we want to thank each and every person that called in and supported the station. So we're able to take a whole day off, our 11-day drive, and we got to end it early. But we would still love for you to show support and to donate to the station that you love. So please donate online at kboo.fm. Thank you so much for the support. And we're unable to have such a great community radio station without a great community supporting us. So we appreciate each and every one of you. So again, kboo.fm, and go to the Donate Now section on the top of the screen. Thanks so much. We'll be right back.
You go and I'll be okay. I can dream the rest away. It's just a little touch of fate. It'll be okay. It sure takes its precious time, but it's got rights and so have I. I turn my head up to the sky. I focus one thought at a time. I do not let the little thieves under my tightly buttoned sleeve. It couldn't be a longer time. I feel like I'm walking blind. I have no arrival time. There are no legible signs.
You were just listening to Lisa Mitchell. That was Neapolitan Dreams. And this is Bread and Roses. We are a feminist news and public affairs radio show coming to you every Friday at 6 p.m. And that story that we heard right before the song about Malala receiving the Nobel Peace Prize is a great segue and reminder about why we're doing this show tonight in honor of International Day of the Girl, which is tomorrow, October 11th. The International Day of the Girl is not just a day. It's a movement focused on highlighting issues that directly impact the lives of girls worldwide. Issues such as gender-based violence, barriers to education, child marriage, rape culture, female mutilation, Title IX access. So tonight on Bread and Roses, we are pleased to have Elizabeth Nye of Girls Inc. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Megan Kovacs of Raphael House. Welcome.
Hi, glad to be here.
Great. And we're going to be discussing their professional work in highlighting these issues affecting our girls, as well as exploring, you know, some of our own personal ideas about what we can all do to support girls and young women. And in the end of the show, in the last 10 or 15 minutes, we would love to hear from you about any, you know, thoughts that you might have or questions that you might have for either of these guests about how to support girls in your own life. So stay tuned for that, because we definitely would love for you to call in. So, yeah. So, you know, we just played, you guys heard the story about Malala. We've all been kind of rejoicing in this news. It's fitting, right? I mean, this is the International Day of the Girls. So I don't know if it was coincided this way or what, but.
Well, you know. Yes. I mean, I think that we were on edge last year when she was nominated, and we're hoping that it would come through. So this was a very welcome surprise. I also had heard that they had one of the highest number of nominees this year for the prize. So the fact that, you know, the committee chose to award it to her and Satya, that was such a great moment for all of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, she's from Pakistan, mm-hmm. he's from India. It's a wonderful day.
It was very intentional.
Yes. And she heard in chemistry class, I heard, which is kind of awesome.
That's great.
Yes. So both Raphael House and Girls Inc. are involved in the community-based initiatives in lots of different areas. So we'd love to hear about the different ways that both of you are supporting girls. Maybe you could just sum up a little bit of the work. We can start maybe with Megan.
Yeah, absolutely. So Raphael House of Portland is a domestic violence agency. So we work a lot in the community to support survivors of domestic and sometimes sexual violence as well. But we also have an education program, which mm-hmm. is the program that I run. So we do a lot of health promotion within the community, healthy relationships and healthy sexuality promotion in high school and middle school classes. And we work on a lot of statewide and local policy around how to prevent domestic and sexual violence, which, as we know, you know, affects young women mm-hmm. most of all. So we're really interested and invested in how our community can make you know, the entire community healthier and safer, especially for young women.
So you're, you know, responding and preventing at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about you, Elizabeth?
So at a very high level, Girls Inc.'s mission is to inspire girls to be strong, smart, and bold. And for us, that lines up to ensuring that girls grow up to be healthy, educated, and independent. Our vision is that through our programming, we are helping to empower girls. And at the same time, through our advocacy work, that we're helping to create a more equitable society, because we don't believe it's enough to empower girls and give them all the tools and the skills that they need, and then as adults do nothing about the conditions into which they are growing up. Mm-hmm. So in our case, we're you know, clearly working directly with girls through our after-school girls group programs throughout the greater Portland metro area. And at the same time, we feel that it's super important that we are teaching them how to have a voice about issues that they care about, and then to actually use that voice to affect change.
That's great. Let's talk more about that, about what you do to actually give these girls mm-hmm. A voice in all different areas. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I'll give an example specific to the International Day of the Girl. Through our programming this summer, we brought girls together to discuss issues that they face in their lives. And through that process, they drafted a proclamation that we have since taken to the governor of the state of Oregon, as well as the mayor of the city of Portland. Both the governor and the mayor then signed the proclamations declaring October 11th the Day of the Girl. But for us, that gave the girls an opportunity to really dig into the things that they experience in their own lives, what they see, and what they'd like to see for the future.
Mm-hmm. And teaching them to advocate mm-hmm. on a greater level. And I think, you know, International Day of the Girl, much like International Women's Day, is not something that's typically recognized in the U.S., so by bringing that locally, they're really actually bringing light. Had, you know, when they brought it to the mayor, had they been involved with this before?
So we have been, this is our third year doing this. Mm-hmm. And we had heard about the International Day of the Girl through our national organization 3 years ago. So prior to that, no, there had never been really anything that, you know, had sparked this. However, At Girls Inc., we, as part of our advocacy work, have drafted and stand behind a girls' bill of rights. Mm-hmm. And so part of our work when we are working with the girls through these activities surrounding International Day of the Girl is also reinforcing and emphasizing and teaching girls about their rights, and they dovetail very nicely. So there are things like girls have the right to accept and appreciate their bodies. Mm-hmm. Girls have the right to be confident and safe in the world. You know, all of these things that, you know, you almost think should be a given or that we may take for granted, but the reality is very different.
Great. And then was there anything in the proclamation that came as a surprise for you?
So every year it's different because it's different girls working on it.
Okay, great.
But one of the things that was very prevalent this year was the conversation around throwing like a girl. Have you seen this? There is a video that a consumer product company put out, and in this video, they ask people to describe what it looks like to throw like a girl. Hmm. And, you know, they ask a broad range of people, and when they do it, they make all of these, you know, sort of derogatory gestures, and they're very demeaning. And then they talk to the people in the video about how they felt about showing that those actions that way. And, you know, do they really believe that's the case, knowing the women that they and the girls that they know in their lives? And there's one little boy who was talking about his sister, and he was like, well, you know, I didn't really mean that about my sister, you know. So mm-hmm. when they personalized it mm-hmm. and really reflected on it, they started to think differently about using phrases like that and the impact it has, you know, on the people they know and then also the general culture that we live in. And then at the very end of the video, they asked them to reframe their answer to what does it look like to throw like a girl, and you see the participants showing, you know, strength in their throwing. Mm,
that's great.
Which is pretty serendipitous with, I mean, there was a, for the first time ever, female Little League pitcher this year, Monet Davis, which, mm-hmm. you know, I mean,
absolutely.
She really has redefined what it means to throw like a girl.
Awesome. Timely.
Yes.
Yeah, and a lot of what we do or what you do with girls is around you know, media and mm-hmm. current events. So can you talk a little bit more about that and how you bring that into your work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, something that I do a lot with, you know, high school and middle school students and in classrooms is really teaching youth to critically analyze media, right? I mean, how we consume the things that, you know, are we're constantly surrounded by. You know, we can't look at a movie, a TV show, a music video, a book even, that, you know, involves a romantic relationship where there aren't unhealthy things happening. You know, that is what creates drama mm-hmm. In a lot of capacities. But how do we analyze that and not internalize that? And I think that that's such a critical piece of talking with youth about media, because it's so easy to just mindlessly consume that mm-hmm. and just, you know, buy into the messages that were being sent without recognizing that that's mm-hmm. what's happening.
Yeah,
I totally agree. We do a media literacy program with our girls beginning as young as age 6. And there are modules that carry with them up through their high school years in this particular program. And what we see in the early years, you know, just setting the stage of what is branding, what is marketing, you know, and we, because I think we live in such, you know, an incredibly rich commercial consumer society that we just sort of assume that our kids know these mm-hmm. things, but until we break it down for them, they don't. Which reminds me, last year, the number one issue that girls were focused on in our proclamation was the whole issue of photoshopping. Mm-hmm. You know, it blew them away. And these were, preteen girls. They had no idea that images were altered to the extent that they are when they see them in magazines and on TV.
Very cool. So, you know, you're talking about kind of dissecting media, looking at things through, you know, a lens that our girls aren't given the tools to look through. Is there anything that you can think of that's kind of a takeaway for our parents or aunties or even, you know, fathers at home for a way, like you mentioned talking with 6-year-olds about mm-hmm. this. So give us some tangible ways that we can take this.
I think that what I see consistently is just starting the conversation about it. So rather than being a passive consumer of the messages, the images, the shows, the songs that we listen to, it's to stop and ask the question, well, what do you think about that image when you see it on the billboard and the woman is, you know, seductively draped over a vacuum, right? What is that telling us?
Absolutely. And I think also talking about, you know, any media that we consume in terms of fantasy versus reality, mm-hmm. right? I think it's so important to be able to create that lens of, like, the media creates a version of reality, but it's not actually reality.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Girls Inc. is focused, you know, on International Day of the Girl this year by a fashion show. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So we've been partnered with Fashion Next for the past few years, and this really dates back to gala fundraiser in the spring called Power of the Purse, where we are actively engaged with the design community in creating one-of-a-kind handbags that we auction off to support girls. And a number of our designers are also involved in Fashion Next. So we have created this partnership. It's also a perfect opportunity for us to really explore what it means to be entrepreneurs. You know, mm-hmm. so many girls and women will be starting their own companies and are interested in design, and often they're not given the skills and the tools to be successful as they pursue these career aspirations. So we are looking at, you know, incorporating our entrepreneurship programs, you know, with girls as they are exploring design.
Excellent. And that this is happening tonight,
I understand. Yes. So our girls tonight will be at Fashion Next, and they will be presenting the proclamation of the International Day of the Girl for the state of Oregon on the runway.
Very cool. Is there any opening availability for seats, or is it sold out?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think at this point it's a highly popular event.
Yes. Well, next year, yes. For sure. Great. So tonight, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Bread and Roses, and we are speaking tonight with Elizabeth Nye, the Executive Director of Girls Inc., and Megan Kovacs, Education Coordinator for Raphael House. And we are talking about the International Day of the Girl. This is a special Bread and Roses episode. And we are going to have some time at the end of the show for you to call in with questions or thoughts about ways that you've really worked on encouraging boldness amongst, you know, your nieces or daughter or students. And we want to hear your ideas. We also, if you have questions for our guests, we'd love to hear those too. And first, we're going to take a short break.
I'd like to take time and thank the restaurants who donated food today. We'd like to thank Eclectic Kitchen, located at 4936 Northeast Fremont, serving breakfast and lunch, including gluten-free bread and pastry options. We'd also like to thank Marrakesh, located at 1201 Northwest 21st Avenue, open daily 5 to 10 p.m., belly dancing Wednesday through Sunday, serving Moroccan cuisine since 1989. Thank you very much for donating food for our volunteers during our fall membership drive.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Community College, where the Southeast Center at 82nd and Division is now a full-fledged campus, allowing students to earn an associate's degree in their own neighborhood. PCC celebrates on October 18th at noon with campus tours, local food vendors, and live Afro-Cuban music by Maleo de Cuba. pcc.edu/celebrate. And you are listening to Bread and Roses. Tonight we are hosting a special show on International Day of the Girl, and we're happy that you've joined in. We're actually going to switch and talk about a coalition that's been around in Oregon for a while, and they've come up with a really cool new tool. So, Elizabeth, I understand you're involved with the Coalition of Equal Access for Girls, and you've devised a new tool called the GSAT mm-hmm. For understanding effectiveness and accessibility for girls in treatment centers and child welfare. So can you tell us a little bit about this?
Absolutely. So I sit on the board of the Coalition of Advocates for Equal Access for Girls, and this group of people, way before my time, so I'm really in awe of all they've done, got together back in 1992 and came together and helped sponsor and pass a bill in Oregon we're the only state in the nation that has a bill that does this. And essentially what it states is that all state agencies providing services to children are required to ensure that girls have equal access to appropriate gender-specific services, treatment, and facilities. So, I mean, this is really groundbreaking in a lot of ways, and many other states are looking at Oregon and this law that's been passed and considering it for their own states. In order to help the process of ensuring that state agencies and programs are meeting this mandate, the coalition applied for and received a grant to develop and pilot a gender-responsive assessment tool, known as the GSAT. We, over the course of the past few years, have developed four different versions of this for use in different settings. And in honor of the International Day of the Girl, we are making it available to programs to use to essentially set a baseline for how they are performing against different measures when they're treating and also working with girls.
That's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is groundbreaking because, I mean, where else is this even happening? Are we the first state to do this?
We are.
That's so exciting.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it's residential treatment centers right now. Is that what I understand? And then maybe larger institutions as well?
It is residential programs. And also we have an assessment tool for therapeutic treatment proctor parents. The tool also includes two versions for girls to take as well so that they can inform the service providers. So the service providers take it, they basically assess themselves, and then there's a corresponding tool that girls can take that lets the service providers know what their view is.
So it's like a 360 evaluation in a way.
Exactly.
That's so great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. What are some examples of a way that a residential center could be deemed gender responsive?
It might be helpful to just share with you how the GSAT was built. It was developed on best practices, and essentially what happened was the group got together and reviewed 9 tools that were out there in the universe on best practices, and it pulled them all together into one comprehensive set of assessments. So there are categories along the lines of things like are the girls receiving information about sexuality, sexual health, et cetera. I mean, it is so extensive that it really is touching upon all aspects of a girl's life, development, and well-being.
Wow. It's very encouraging to hear this is happening. And I understand there's a training coming up as well.
There is. So on October 17th, the Coalition is conducting a training at PSU. It's being sponsored by the Women's Resource Center and Girls Inc. And this training is specifically for people who work with girls. And the day has a series of workshops that are designed to strengthen people's impact in their work with girls. We, at this point, definitely invite people to come to the training. There is still space available, and information about it is on the Equal Access for Girls website, as well as the Girls Inc. website.
Great. And I think you can register right through Girls Inc.
You can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So I understand that, the coalition really arose out of an issue around equity and, not seeing aligned funding with serious issues, right? So many of our girls that are being trafficked, for example, are girls of color and girls with trauma history. Mm-hmm. So what's the whole coalition working to do in terms of research and kind of pushing back on advocacy efforts?
So in terms of the work that the coalition does, Pam Patton, who is our president and chair, essentially sits on a number of different advisory committees at the state level. And she is known up and down as being the person who will call you out if what is happening is going to negatively impact girls. So whether it's child welfare, you know, et cetera. So she is the consistent voice representing girls across the state and making sure that, you know, there are lots of times when budget implications are being made where it looks quote unquote neutral, but really it is affecting girls and that services reaching girls.
Great. Are you seeing some headway? I know it's an uphill battle sometimes.
Sometimes. And it's been difficult given the current budget environment that Oregon has been coming through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, I think having these tangible tools and trainings and getting the word out as you all are here, it's really helping. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keeping girls at the forefront. So props to you for that. So let's talk about, you know, educating in your work, Megan. You spend almost every day, I think, educating in some way or another. So that's awesome. I know you've worked at the organization that I work for, Native American Youth and Family Center, and you've partnered with us. So talk about how you focus on educating youth about all forms of oppression and how this, in effect, combats gender violence and gender oppression.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the approach that we take is, one of health promotion. So one of health promotion around, you know, healthy sexuality and healthy relationships, really, and giving youth tools to practice healthier things within their relationships. And, you know, I come from the lens and, you know, Raphael House and the work that I do comes from the lens of, you know, anti-oppression work and anti-oppression mm-hmm. theory and, you know, looking at the intersection of all types of oppression and all types of privilege and power and how that plays out to affect the access that people have to practicing, you know, healthy sexuality, to accessing sexual health services, to, receiving information about sexual health and healthy relationships. So I really try to take that lens and that approach when working with youth and when working with the community as well. Similar to what you were saying earlier, Elizabeth, you know, it's, you know, we can work with youth as much as, you know, we want to, but it's really important to reinforce those messages in every aspect of the community as well. So, you know, trying to work with parents, trying to work with schools and administrators so that we can consistently reinforce this message. And Elizabeth and I worked a few years ago on another mm-hmm. policy that is in the process of being implemented and passed called the Healthy Teen Relationship Act, which is, you know, it's essentially a policy that all school districts in Oregon have to adopt to address teen dating violence and also to take a proactive approach to addressing healthy relationships in schools. So, you know, it's a really integral policy in creating equity in schools mm-hmm. and addressing, you know, trauma-informed practices and sexual health. So, you know, working with that policy to implement it on all different levels mm-hmm. has been really critical.
And so you're doing some technical assistance in that area so that schools get it right?
Trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, as all policy is an uphill battle.
Yes. Did you want to add anything about educating around oppression?
At Girls Inc., our lens, is, I think, what I would consider complementary to what was described regarding Raphael House, in that we are a positive youth prevention programming. So it is definitely part of what we do, but we're looking at it from how do we set things on the right course from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you work with children as young as six?
Six. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there's parents out there and there are aunties and there's dads and everybody has a role in this and a responsibility in this, in educating our girls and bringing them up to be bold, strong women. So we want to invite callers at this point to call in and share some things that maybe you've done or some questions that you might have. Our phone number is 503-231-8187. And if you are just tuning in, you're listening to Bread and Roses, and this is a special on the International Day of the Girl, which is happening tomorrow. And we're hosting Megan Kovacs from Raphael House tonight and Elizabeth Nye from Girls Inc. So let's turn to some of the recent current events that have really thrusted gender inequalities into the national spotlight. So obviously there's been some high profile domestic violence incidents in pro football, and that's really got people talking. And then another event was the response to Emma Watson's speech to the UN about gender inequality and her launching of the He for She campaign. And after her speech, you know, she received public threats to post nude photos of her online. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be a hoax, but the threats were very real. And overall, you know, after all of that, I think the mostly the response that I've seen has been powerful and positive by a lot of men and women. And men are getting on board, you know, it's a he for she campaign. So the whole campaign is about men standing up for gender inequality and writing it. So, and I think it's important, but I think we also have to be careful about just giving lip service to men and a ticket to say, yes, as a man, I believe gender inequality is wrong. So as they're getting involved, you know, I think we need to help men recognize where the power imbalances lie and how to correct them. So what do you think about the roles of boys in these issues and how we can get them connected and involved in more than just like a standing up and, you know, maybe just giving their voice, but what else can we do?
I don't know. Absolutely. I mean, I think that there are a lot of efforts that are happening in parallel process mm-hmm. to, promote healthy masculinity and get men on board with, you know, something that feminism has been doing for the past, you know, decades. But I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, all of these initiatives are really great. I mean, they're really important and they're really critical in prevention. They're really critical in promoting equity. But I also think that, you know, in order to promote equity, the reason that there is inequity is because people aren't willing, able, or capable of unpacking their own privilege mm-hmm. and their own access to power and giving that up and what that means and what that looks like. So I really think that, you know, it's about educating people, men, mm-hmm. about what it looks like to be not only be aware of, but unpack mm-hmm. their own privilege. Mm-hmm. I mean, one part of having privilege is taking up a lot of space. And is that something that's going to be a result of inviting men to the table for mm-hmm. this? You know, it's complicated. It's complex. We want them there, but we also want them to listen.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of some work that we did last year around the documentary Misrepresentation. And we've hosted it for adult audiences. We've also hosted it for high school audiences. And when we did so, we did it in a mixed gender environment, which is actually different for us because we typically work with girls specifically and only. But when we did it in the mixed gender environment, it was fascinating, I think, to watch the reactions of the young men in the room. One of the things that comes out of it, and we know it from the research, is that some of the things that are happening to girls as a result, for example, of all of the stereotypes that are put out through the media about who girls are supposed to be, are now happening to boys, right? Mm-hmm. So when you look at happiness with their bodies, right, increasingly boys also are starting to feel the same pressures that girls are, and they used to be quote unquote immune from that. So I think that when, in a lot of cases, when we segregate it and say that at times that this is a girl issue and this is a boy issue, we're missing the point. Mm-hmm. And when we start to address, you know, all of these together, it can, I think, lead to a better outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and teaching our young people and, well, all people, mm-hmm. but starting with young people, right, how to interrupt when and change things rather than... I think it's awesome when guys stand up and say they're feminists. Mm-hmm. I really do. But it's like, what else can we do on top of that?
Yeah, you can't just say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I think that, you know, a part of the importance of talking about equity and talking about feminism is, you know, this is beneficial for everyone. And mm-hmm. that's the message that everyone needs to buy into. And, you know, when we value things that are traditionally coded female or feminine, you know, that gives young men space to mm-hmm. identify in those ways as well.
Absolutely. So we are talking tonight about International Day of the Girl, and we're inviting callers to call in with any thoughts or questions or ideas that you have. The number is 503-231-8187. So, sticking on this topic of working with young men and boys. So what are some of the surprising things that you've seen in this work, you know, in the high schools or just in general here?
I had a really great class last year. One of, you know, my favorite stories from doing this work for the past 8 years. I had a multi-session presentation with one of the high schools in town, and we were talking about rape culture mm-hmm. and oftentimes when having that conversation with high school students and really in any community, there's a lot of defensiveness. There's a lot of myths being thrown around. And, you know, we really deconstructed those myths and talked about the reasons why we believe that and, you know, what we can do to create a healthier and safer community for everyone and what it means when we, you know, buy into those myths and blame survivors and, you know, shame young women. And by the end of the presentation, the boys who were most combative within that presentation were identifying as feminists.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was really good.
They got it.
Yeah, they got it, finally. Yeah. I mean, it took a few hours, but, over the course of many weeks, but finally got there. And there's also another initiative that I've been working on in conjunction with the Defending Childhood Initiative in Multnomah County. And that is implementing a Coaching Boys into Men program at one of the local high schools. And, you know, we finished our first pilot year of that, or really they finished their first pilot year of that. And, you know, some of the results have been pretty amazing in, you know, having coaches teach young men about healthy masculinity is so powerful. You know, talking to them about how they treat women, why they treat women the way they do, how they buy into, you know, the ideas that the media or our culture creates for them. The results of that have been incredible. And the change in the coaches, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just have to jump in and say that I've been the executive director of Girls Inc. for 5 years now, and I can't tell you how many times I have had to answer the question, is there a Boys Inc.? And it's, you know, so I get the question of what you're doing with girls is so important. There should be a corresponding effort with boys, so it's nice. And, you know, I'm very encouraged to see this work happening. And the other response sometimes that I get, which I'll point out, and I think it's worth mentioning, is sometimes people will say to me, oh, but girls are doing just fine, right? They're graduating from high school at higher levels. They're getting college degrees at higher levels, et cetera. The girls are the super achievers of today. And, you know, we have to worry about our boys. And one of the things that I'm always quick to point out that this is not a competition between boys and girls. This is about making sure that each child is getting what they need to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, that's what equity is about,
exactly.
Right? It's leveling the playing field. And, you know, when we set gender up as a zero-sum game, that is the problem.
It is.
Yeah. And absolutely. It's easy for people to jump back to that, I think.
Oh, I hear it all the time.
Huh. Interesting. Yes. Yeah, so we would love to hear your thoughts, listeners. So please, you know, pick up the phone and give us a call if you have something to say or add to the conversation, if you have a thought or a question for our guests tonight. We're talking about International Day of the Girl and what we can do to raise our girls and our boys to be emboldened, strong adults in the future. The number to call is 503-231-8187. So you've done education, it seems like, for in mixed groups, Megan, and also just with girls. Is there a difference when you get the boys and girls in the room together? Does it work better one way or another? And what are some tips for engaging youth around interrupting violence that we can all kind of hold on to and give back to the kids that we work with?
I like teaching co-ed groups because it gives young men and young women space to talk about relationships together and talk about sex and sexual health and healthy sexuality together and, you know, learn from one another as well. I think, you know, and the places where I see, you know, kind of gender segregated classes working really well is when we're talking like specifically about trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, I find that young men, I just had a class earlier this week where, again, we're talking about rape culture. We're analyzing a scenario, and it was the young men who were defending all of the rape myths. And, you know, I had to keep going back and reminding people and reminding the entire class that, like, this is a space where there are inevitably survivors. Mm-hmm. And when we are buying into, again, all of those, you know, cultural norms that people believe around sexual violence, you know, we're impacting the survivors that are in this space. And, you know, I'm hoping I have another class with them next week. So I'm really looking forward to digging in a little bit deeper and trying to, you know, kind of talk a little bit more about why we believe those things and how we can promote healthier and safer norms around, you know, sexual health, and also, you know, kind of dismantle and deconstruct a lot of the myths that people are buying into around sexual violence.
Yeah. What are some of the myths that you hear from kids that are
oh, that she's just lying the next day, that she was drunk. And, you know, I mean, literally written on the sheets was, you know, of this story, you know, that I wrote, which was an amalgamation of stories of survivors that I've worked with. She was just drunk. She doesn't know what she was doing. I mean, you know, that's how a lot of high school students, young men and young women, are talking about sexual violence and what is, you know, a pretty clearly a case of sexual violence. And yet this is still the culture we live in. So there's still a lot of work to be done to, you know, really, I mean, I think that as, you know, for as far as we've come, I think feminism is really having a moment recently. But I think that for as far as we've come, you know, whenever I see that, you know, written down by a high school student, it's like, wow, we have some work to do.
Yeah. All right. We do have a caller. Georgia, welcome.
Hi. I'm a nurse, an RN, and I have worked a lot in the ER and ICU with victims of sexual violence, and believe it or not, it's boys and girls, men and women. And I have three children. They're all grown, and one is a woman, and the other two are men. And I think that our young boys and girls, maybe even for the last 10 or 15 years, have both sexes felt very, very concerned about what they look like, how they present themselves, and so forth when they're teenagers. I do not think it's something that's just starting with boys in the last, you know, however many years one of you were saying. I think it's been there for a long time, and I believe when my husband was alive, he went through the same thing and as a teenage boy. And so I just wanted to say that, and I also, and you can comment on that, of course, you know, because that's my viewpoint, but I am a mother. I have three children.
Yeah, thank
that
you.
Are now grown. But the other thing that I wonder, and I've often heard this, I, of course, had to work as a nurse. I became a widow fairly when my kids were still, you know, like, well, my youngest was eight. So I always had to work. But one of the things that I found is that many women, even in this culture, and, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say which side of the fence they're on, but they tend to be the woman that is, I'm a stay-at-home mom, why aren't you? And I have no problems with a mom that stays at home. I think I have the greatest respect for a mother that wants to do that and is able to financially. But I do find that some of our women, even women my age, or younger, some of them are on the other side of the fence, that they're, I don't know what the word would be, tend to be more traditionalists, I guess I would say. And I just wondered if you have encountered that or what your feeling is about it. And so then I'll get off and off the phone, and then I'll just listen to your comments.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Sounds like Thank Megan you. Wants to respond first here.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I think part of, you know, what Elizabeth was saying about, you know, us recognizing that young men are having, you know, body image stuff come up for them in the past few years is, like, it's only been, in the past, you know, maybe 10 years or so that we've allowed for that space, too. Mm-hmm. It's not that this hasn't been happening over time, but we've traditionally taught young men that they're not supposed to have those feelings, that they're not supposed to talk about their feelings or talk about their insecurities. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is one of the positive impacts of feminism. That's one of the positive impacts of this type of health promotion and this type of equity promotion, is that we have allowed young men to have the space to talk about insecurities, to talk about their fears. You know, talking about feelings has traditionally been coded a feminine thing. And, you know, when we promote equity, we allow everyone the space to talk about those things. So I think, you know, when we say we've only seen this happening in the past few years or the past 10 years or whatever, I think that, you know, that's because we finally allowed the space for it. It's not that it hasn't been happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And her other point that she brought up that was really great, I think feminism has been a very polarized movement in the past 30 to 40 years. And we've moved into a new era, and everyone is welcome at the table. And I'm really hopeful that things will continue to grow and change in that light, that men and women will be able to work together to move forward these agendas. Do you Want to comment on that?
I totally agree. I will say that at Girls Inc., at our local affiliate, the work that we're doing with girls, our ultimate vision is that our girls do grow up to be economically independent, right? So we, in most of, well, in fact, every program that we do, we are exposing girls to role models, careers that they might not have had exposure to because, the predominant population of girls that we're serving are girls living in poverty. And we would be doing a disservice to these girls if we are not also preparing them to be able to take care of themselves. So while we respect people's life's choices, we also want to make sure that our girls have options.
Right, absolutely.
And I was going to say, I think also, you know, the value of feminism and equity is that we're giving people a choice, right? Like, we're giving people a choice. We're allowing people access to all of the options that they have on the table, right? So whether that be a traditional role or a really independent role or somewhere in between, people have a choice in that. It's not something that they have to be forced into.
Absolutely. And choice is key, as we just heard earlier about all the reproductive justice freedoms being taken away and how that directly affects women's health as well, and well-being and personal wealth and all of those things. So yeah, we only have a few minutes left, but we would love to hear a bit. I would actually be neglectful if I didn't mention that October is Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. So let's hear what you have going for that, Raphael House, and what's around the Portland area.
Sure. It's actually Domestic Violence Awareness Month. February is Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month.
You're right.
There are so many awareness months. So yeah, there are a few things happening in the community. There's a domestic violence training that's happening on October 23rd that's going to be hosted at the YWCA, and that's open to anyone who's interested in it. And we call it DV 102, but it's really an interactive experience of what it looks like for survivors to access different systems, what barriers exist, you know, what domestic violence looks like, you know, as a survivor. And then also Bradley Engel, one of Raphael House's sister agencies, is putting on a domestic violence and pop culture panel on October 30th, and I am going to be on the panel. So I would be remiss if I didn't promote that. It's at the Clinton Street Theater, and you can find more information on our website, raphaelhouse.com, or Bradley Engel's website, bradleyengel.org.
Very cool. Great. And then one other event that we wanted to promote is at Native American Youth and Family Center on October 22nd from 5:30 to 8:00. There's a screening of the film Young Lakota, and it's a wonderful film about reproductive justice freedom in South Dakota, and the president of the Oglala Lakota Nation, Cecilia Fire Thunder, who tried to get an abortion clinic on her reservation and then was kicked out after that. So that's October 22nd, 5:30 to 8:00 at the Native American Youth and Family Center, 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard. And there's going to be door prizes and a panel and dinner at that event. So in the last 3 minutes, I would love to hear from you about if you have some takeaways that we can give to our empowered moms, aunties, dads, brothers, that we can do to ensure that we're passing on the torch to the girls in our lives and creating emboldened girls. So what are some things that people can do every day with their girls?
I was going to say something that I heard today at one of our events. There was the Family Violence Coordinating Council had an award ceremony this morning. And one of the judges said something about, you know, we need to just light more torches. So I think that, you know, one of the most important conversations that we can have, especially with young women, but with young men too, is, you know, feeling comfortable talking about healthy sexuality, feeling comfortable talking about healthy relationships, and, you know, doing that critical media analysis as well. Like, what are we consuming? And, you know, how does that influence the ways that we think about ourselves, the ways that we think about relationships, and certainly the ways that we think about sex, because I think that that's such a huge influencing factor.
Great. Thank you.
And in our case, we are actively asking adults to promote leadership with girls. One of the things that we know about girls that gets in the way of their leadership aspirations is an unwillingness to take risks. It's the playing it safe behavior. And so when, as adults, we have girls in our lives, really encouraging them to take healthy risks and to put themselves out there and to make mistakes and to know that that's okay and to really help them learn and grow from those experiences.
To encourage them to raise their hand.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I want to thank the guests tonight. We had Elizabeth Nye of Girls Inc. And you can find Elizabeth Nye at what's your website?
At girlsincpnw.org.
Great. And Megan Kovacs of Raphael House. And how do people find you?
Our website, raphaelhouse.com.
Great. So thank you so much, listeners, for tuning in to this special International Day of the Girl show tonight on Bread and Roses. We are here every Friday night at 6 p.m. We're a feminist collective, and we encourage you to send us an email with your ideas for shows. Go to our Facebook page at kboo.fm/Bread and Roses, and you can just search for us on Facebook and connect with us there. You can email us right through the website. We'd also love for you to get involved. There's ways to be an engineer, a host, all sorts of different ways to get involved, and we encourage all women identified folks to reach out to us, and we'd love to welcome you in. Thank you so much. Have a great night, and stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio.
Stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too. March to four men for their women's children, and we're mothers again. No more shall we labor from birth till life closes.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. I'd just like to say that this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from True West, presenting Texas songwriter and jazz singer Kat